I'm Todd McKay.
And I'm Franco Terrazano.
And this is a Canadian Taxpayers Podcast. We're dedicated to lower taxes, less waste, more accountable government. And in this episode, we got a big win. We won at the Supreme Court of Canada. We're going to talk all about that in our deep dive. We're going to talk about a bunch of other legal fights that we've got cooking. And in Waste Watch, political parties, they're just diving right into the trough and taking a whole bunch more money that's meant for struggling Canadians. We're going to give you a big update on that.
Yeah, but before we dive into all that fun stuff, Todd, we have some more exclusive news about the ridiculous cost for the renovations at the Prime Minister's cottage at Harrington Lake. Now, millions of dollars have already been spent upgrading Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's retreat, but just wait until you hear some of these unusually large expenses for some of the upgrades.
You know, I've been talking to James Wood, our investigative reporter, about some of these specifics. I don't even know what to say. They seem crazy. But before we get into all of that, Franco, give a little bit of background. What is Harrington Lake?
Well, Harrington Lake is the cottage that's specifically set aside for prime ministers and their families. And it's run by the National Capital Commission, which is like a supercharged bureaucratic parks and recs board for the capital. Now, there's a 16-room cottage with a newly made farmhouse. And make no mistake about it, this isn't your typical grandma's cottage out in the countryside that you went to when you were a kid. This is a prime time luxury estate.
Yeah, it's a pretty swanky spot. They're doing huge renos out there, and members of parliament actually started asking big questions about it a few months ago. At that time, the NCC told parliament the bill was coming in at about $8.6 million. But our investigative journalist, James Wood, he doesn't take anybody's word for anything. He's a you know, check it out sort of fella. He dug into it. He found documents to show that bill is already north of $10 million. So here we are, millions spent. We've dug out some more of the details. We've got some pretty unusual expenses. Franco, what really raised your eyebrows?
Well, I've got one that's really going to get your attention here. The government paid $20,000 for a window mock-up. Now, what's a window mock-up, you might ask? Well, that's a great question. And we asked the NCC bureaucrats to elaborate. And they said the window mock-up were part of, get this, quality control. But the bureaucrats haven't been able to tell us why this would cost $20,000.
You know, when you look at the world today and everybody's struggling, I can't see too many of my friends spending $20,000 on replacing the windows on their home. I definitely don't see too many people going out and spending $20,000 on windows for their cottage. But we're not talking about the actual windows here. We're talking about a window mock-up. This is crazy. I don't know how the NCC is going to justify this.
And Todd, that's just the tip of the iceberg. More than $10,000 was spent on a planting plan. Now that's five figures for some greenery that only the prime minister and his family gets to see. And you know what? With a price tag like that, that garden better be coming with a swanky in-ground pool and a big old jacuzzi.
Well, the crazy part of it is they're paying for the plan there. Like, listen, if somebody needs a planting plan, give me a call. I'll connect you with my grandma. She'll put a killer plan together. She's got a beautiful garden, beautiful roses, all that kind of thing. It doesn't cost her $10,000 to put the plan together. But that's not all. We also found that the NCC spent $3,000 on photographic services. So the NCC tried to give us the runaround on this. Hey, don't worry. This is a routine part of construction costs. But you know what? That's crazy. $3,000 just to take photos of this work when it's done? This is completely out of control.
Yeah, and the NCC bureaucrats also said that we shouldn't compare these renovation costs at Harrington Lake with your run-of-the-mill home renovations. They argue things like extra security costs should be factored in. Well, okay, you know what? I might buy that one. But the bureaucrats also try to justify the big price tag by describing the area as, quote, somewhat remote.
Somewhat remote. What does that mean? Harrington Lake is less than 30 kilometers away from 24 Sussex, which is the prime minister's official residence. Now, I'm kind of an expert on somewhat remote. I grew up in the middle of nowhere, Saskatchewan. it was a longer drive just to go to the store and back to get milk where I grew up. Harrington Lake is not anywhere in the neighborhood of remote. And I'm not the only one who thinks so. So we talked to Conservative MP Michael Barrett. We've talked to him before. He's one of the guys who've been pushing to get the expenses on the Harrington Lake renovations. Here's what he had to say about that somewhat remote crack.
Well, I think the characterization of a property, you know, in the National Capital Region as being remote is pretty rich. I think that there are many parts of our country that are hard to access and have legitimate concerns for being able to access services. And I don't think that a property that's able to be accessed by car year round within an hour's drive from Parliament Hill is reasonably considered as remote.
And you can get the full story at taxpayer.com, and we'll of course include the links right here in the show notes. And remember, this is an exclusive story from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. The press gallery in Ottawa hasn't reported on these crazy expenses. But don't you worry, we'll stay on the story and we'll continue to update you on any new crazy expenses that we might dig up.
Next up, I want to talk about our big victory at the Supreme Court of Canada. We've got Federal Director Aaron Woodruff coming in for a deep dive. He's going to tell us about the big win and he's going to tell us about the fights we're coming after next. So stay with us. It's time for a deep dive. This is when we get deeper into important issues. And honestly, I thought about starting this segment with, you know, that rock anthem, We Are the Champions. Feeling pretty good, but we're not going to pay for those royalty fees. So we've got our federal director, Aaron Woodruff, here. He's also a recovering lawyer. Aaron, tell us where we're at.
I'm feeling pretty good today because we won at the Supreme Court of Canada. It was a case basically about whether or not judges could force governments to give judges a raise, and whether governments could just say no to third-party commissions recommending those raises, or if they had to justify it by releasing confidential documents. And the Supreme Court of Canada, I'm happy to say, agreed with us and said as long as governments act in good faith and follow the rules, they are not obligated to give judges big pay raises.
Man, that's a huge win. That's a huge win for taxpayers. It's always good to get a win, but a win at the Supreme Court, that's a whole nother level.
It is, and it's really not just about judges' pay. It's a much bigger principle. It's about where the buck stops when it comes to spending taxpayer money. You know, we, you, me, everyone else, we get to elect our politicians, and we can throw them out if we're not happy with them. And that's why it's so important that they're the ones that have the final say when it comes to spending our money, because the alternative to that is to have unelected people who are not accountable to anyone making those decisions.
Yeah, we already have too many unelected, unaccountable folks around, particularly in the Senate. We definitely don't need unelected, unaccountable commissions throwing out big raises that they don't have any responsibility for paying for.
Yeah, and that's why this was a real common sense decision from the Supreme Court. It was also significant for us as an organization because it was the first time the CTF was in the Supreme Court, so it was nice to get the W there. And as it happens, our second appearance is actually going to be in just about a month from now.
Yeah, we're 1-0 so far. We want to go on a winning streak. What's the next game? What are we doing in the next round of the Supreme Court?
Yeah, we can talk about the carbon tax fight. A lot of you will know by now that the Trudeau government imposed a carbon tax on 5 provinces, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Ontario, and New Brunswick. Even though the governments in those provinces didn't want one. And those provinces actually took the Trudeau government to court, and the CTF, we intervened in every one of those cases.
Now, it's always good to just pause on legal terms. Intervener, tell us a little bit about what that really means in a practical sense.
Intervening basically means to join in an existing case to present additional legal arguments. You need to ask the court's permission for it. But if you get the green light, you try to bring something extra and different to the table to help the court make a decision. And when the CTF intervenes, we're trying to bring the taxpayer view to the table. And as it turns out for the carbon tax challenges, we were actually the only non-government group to intervene to oppose the carbon tax. Every other intervener was in favor of the tax.
And there were a lot of interveners who were backing up the Trudeau carbon tax. Literally dozens of them, David Suzuki Foundation, EcoJustice, many, many others with really deep pockets and big legal teams. The Canadian Taxpayers Federation is the only non-government organization at the Supreme Court to fight the carbon tax. You know, I got to say, when we first jumped into it, a lot of people, a lot of the pundits, they kind of laughed at us. They said we didn't have a chance. You know, they said it was just a political stunt. But we did our homework. I remember we met with Dwight Newman. He's a constitutional expert. And he said, listen, this is going to be a much, much closer fight than some of these so-called experts are telling everybody. Take us through the ups and downs of the carbon tax court fight.
Well, in two provinces, Ontario and Saskatchewan, the majority of the court ruled that the Trudeau carbon tax was constitutional. They had the power to do it. In Alberta, by contrast, a majority ruled that it was unconstitutional. The Trudeau government didn't have the power to do it. But what's really interesting is if you count the number of judges, because there were five judges on each panel deciding in each province, you actually get eight judges who ruled that it was constitutional and seven ruling it was unconstitutional. So you can see how divided judges are on this issue.
Yeah, an 8-7 score going into the final round. That's about as close as it gets.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court is the final tiebreaker. It's you can think of it as game seven in the Stanley Cup final. It's going to be up to them to sort out these conflicting decisions. And, you know, their say is the final say. And it's coming up fast. September 22nd is when the hearings begin. And once again, we're the only non-government group participating that's against the carbon tax.
Now, obviously, we've been fighting the carbon tax for years now. But there's another important fight that we've been fighting and winning for years. And it has to do with transparency in First Nations communities.
Yeah, this battle is actually one where we partnered with Charmaine Stick. She's a member of the Onion Lake Cree Nation in Saskatchewan to try to get something actually really, really simple done, just to get the chief and council to follow the law and just publish their audited financial statements.
Yeah, and I've got to say, I got to be clear about it. I'm a friend of Charmaine's now. We've gotten to know each other. We've worked closely on this. And, you know, I can't think of anybody I know who's tougher and more courageous than Charmaine. But that's one side of it. That's the activism side of it. What's this legal fight about?
Yeah, in 2014, the Harper government, which was pushed hard by the CTF, introduced a law called the First Nations Financial Transparency Act, or the FNFTA. And this law required all First Nations bands in Canada to simply post their audited financial statements online so that their band members could see how they were spending money. And the reason here is the same as it is for any other government, federal, provincial, municipal, and that is that everyone has the right to know how their leaders are spending their money. And we think that includes First Nations. Now, most First Nations bands in Canada complied, no problem, but there were a handful who didn't. And when the Trudeau government came to power in 2015, one of the first things they did was announce that they weren't actually going to enforce the law anymore. Thankfully, the law itself has a clause in it that lets anybody, including a band member, go to court to ask for an order to force the band to be transparent. And that's exactly what Charmaine and CTF did.
Yeah, and it's really frustrating, to be totally honest with you. The Trudeau government, you know, when it first came in, it was talking a lot about transparency and accountability. But then to reverse an important measure like this one so quickly, it's a huge step backwards for transparency. But this goes deeper. You know, one of the things that Charmaine's talked to me about a lot is that accountability and transparency, they're part of her community's heritage, and it needs to be respected. And I got to know another activist, a guy named Harrison Thunderchild, and he's a direct descendant of Chief Thunderchild, who was an original signatory for the treaties. And Harrison is adamant transparency is a part of his heritage as well. You know, it's really wrong for the federal government to just, you know, shrug and walk away and leave folks like Charmaine and other Indigenous activists totally there hung out to dry on the issue of accountability.
Yeah, it's going in the opposite direction that they promised, and it just doesn't make any sense. And the worst part is, even though we've already won in court repeatedly, Onion Lake just keeps fighting, trying to find technicalities to drag out the court fight. In fact, we were just back in court in June, trying to get them to release documents from more recent years. But lo and behold, the federal government was nowhere to be found. They won't enforce their own laws, so it's up to Charmaine and CTF to do it for them.
Yeah, that's just embarrassing for Ottawa. And we'll keep holding them responsible on this as well. Now, we've talked about carbon taxes. We've talked about First Nations transparency. And we've been in those fights for a while. Let's talk about a couple of the court battles that we've jumped into just recently.
For sure. In June, we actually applied to intervene in the Alberta government's challenge to the Impact Assessment Act, which used to be known as Bill C-69. And that's a law passed by the Trudeau government that would basically make it impossible to get big natural resource projects built.
Yeah, I think there's a nickname for that particular bill, the No More Pipelines Bill. And listen, at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we've worked hard to let people know how much it costs taxpayers when we can't get, you know, fair prices for our oil and gas, those kind of things, because we can't get these pipelines built. Those are the economic arguments. Tell us a little bit about the legal arguments we're making.
Yeah, the main argument that the Kenny government is using has to do with division of powers, whether Ottawa has the right to even pass this kind of law in the first place. It's actually very similar to the carbon tax argument. Now, our argument at the CTF, it's a little more nuanced and has to do with whether it's fair to taxpayers for these decisions to be made by the level of government that's less connected to the people who are impacted. So, for example, if Ottawa kills projects, but it's actually people in Fort McMurray who feel all the pain, is that fair? Is that reasonable?
Yeah, that really causes rifts in the country when you've got people in Ottawa killing a project and nobody in Ontario really feels the impact of it. But people in Alberta or Saskatchewan or wherever really suffer as a result. That's a problem that needs to be dealt with. What other fights have we jumped into lately?
We're actually going to court to stop Ottawa's gun ban and buyback.
And of course, that one's very controversial. We understand people have really different views on that one. But listen, we studied the government's plan. We took a look at the order in council that it brought down. And here's our view. It's going to cost taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe billions, but it won't make us safer. And that's what we heard when we surveyed our supporters as well. And further to that, regardless of the merit of the policy, the government did this the wrong way because there wasn't even a vote in Parliament on this.
Yeah, and that's an important point, is that this isn't just about whether the policy is good, it's about whether the process was followed. You know, we recently just filed our applications. It's in the federal court this time. We're waiting to hear back. But as you say, this is a potentially very expensive boondoggle in the making, and it really wasn't transparent since it wasn't even voted on in Parliament.
And, you know, I think that's going to make a lot of people scratch their heads because they assume that when Ottawa does something, MPs must be voting on it. But that's not the case in this case. How can it be that this major change to the legal system has happened without a vote in Parliament?
Yeah, a lot of people may not realize it, but cabinets in our system of government actually have a lot of power. When there's a majority government, that often doesn't make much of a practical difference because the cabinet's made up of MPs who also have a majority of the votes in Parliament. But right now we're in a minority government, so it's a very different story. And refusing to vote on something in Parliament can make it look like you're trying to dodge having a vote.
Well, for sure, it looks like they're trying to dodge shit. If they really believed their law was a good one and it would pass in the House, you'd think they'd have put it to a vote.
Yeah, you'd think, but they didn't. And there's also the issue of cost, as you mentioned. This could end up being an insanely expensive buyback. And it goes without saying that right now, we don't have a lot of spare cash lying around Ottawa to pay for it.
Okay, so that's a real rapid-fire look at a bunch of the legal battles that we're in. Some people might wonder why we're involved in so many legal fights. It's not like we're a law firm. So what's the rationale for our strategy here?
Well, it's true we're not a law firm, but we are an advocacy group and we're trying to affect political change. And part of the reason we've been going to court so often is that more and more, that's where the fight is actually taking place. The carbon tax fight is a perfect example. The David Suzuki Foundation and dozens of others are there to push the carbon tax. And if our opponents are going to court, well, we need to be there to push back as well.
Let me skip down to the bottom line here, because lawyers are not cheap and we have to be really careful with the resources we have. What kind of bang are we getting for our buck here?
I'm not going to deny that lawyers can be expensive, but the thing is, there's a good number of lawyers out there that are actually on our side of the issues. And for a lot of them, these kind of fights are actually fun. So more often than not, we manage to find a lawyer. In some cases, it's lawyers actually coming to us with the idea, and they end up giving us a really good deal. So it's still not cheap, but it's possible. And most importantly, our supporters are amazing, and they always come up with the money when we ask for donations to cover the bills.
And listen, everybody likes a good deal, especially when it's something that's usually pretty pricey, but it still all comes down to results. What kind of results are we getting? How are you feeling about our performance here?
I'm feeling pretty good. I mean, winning's never guaranteed in a courtroom, but I can tell you, lately we've been winning a lot. We won in Ontario, when we backed the Ford government's effort to cut Toronto City Council in half. We won the latest round of the carbon tax fight in Alberta. And we just recently won on judges' pay at the Supreme Court. So safe to say we're on a bit of a winning streak, and hopefully that streak keeps going this fall with the carbon tax in the Supreme Court.
And if folks want to know more about any of these campaigns, we've got lots more information about them on taxpayer.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Sorry for interrupting the podcast, but I wanted to take a few seconds of your time to tell you more about the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. We are 235,000 Canadians from coast to coast that are fed up. We are fed up with politicians taking too much out of our paychecks, often to waste it on a bunch of pet projects, corporate welfare, and pork barreling to buy votes. We organize campaigns to push back on these politicians. These campaigns often include petition drives, billboards, media stunts, and more. But most importantly, they ask our supporters to pitch in and take action. Alone, we're a voice in the wilderness. Together, we're an army to be reckoned with. You can join the fight and sign up at no cost at taxpayer.com. That website again is taxpayer.com. Okay, now back to the podcast.
It's time for Waste Watch. This is when we make fun of the dumb things governments are spending your money on. Franco, tell us about what you've got for us today.
Well, Todd, it doesn't get any more wasteful than this. And political parties are doing what they do best. Since March, they've been quietly reaching into our back pockets and taking more tax dollars than they normally do. La Presse, which is a Quebec news outlet, reported that federal political parties have taken $1.8 million through the federal wage subsidy.
You know, that's a lot of money, but this is about more than just the amount. Think about what this program is actually for. It's supposed to help employers affected by COVID-19 by providing a 75% wage subsidy so that they can keep their employees on. So small businesses are struggling in a big way. Their employees are struggling in a big way. This is supposed to help those folks. It's not meant to force Canadians to subsidize political parties more than we already do. So, Franco, what's the score? How much has each party been taking?
Well, the Liberals have the dubious honor of taking the most with $850,000, but the Conservatives are in a close second place with $716,000. And the NDP have taken an additional $265,000 through the federal wage subsidy. The only major federal party who hasn't applied for the wage subsidy is the Bloc Québécois. And I'm going to read you a quote from leader Yves-François Blanchet about what he had to say about it. Here's what he said, and I quote, "The emergency wage subsidy was put in place to help employees and businesses get through this crisis. It is unacceptable that political parties, especially the Liberals and the Conservatives, use public funds to pay partisan salaries," end quote.
Man, the Bloc leader is hitting it right on the head here. How is it possible that the Bloc is the only party to get this right? All of the parties need to be turning down this money. All of them need to be paying back what they already took. But here's the part I'm finding really odd. All four of the candidates for the leadership of the Conservative Party have said that political parties shouldn't be taking this money. They've already been talking about paying it back. And yet, the Conservative Party is still taking the money as we speak. They know the new boss isn't going to want them to do it, whoever the new boss is. And yet they're not acting accordingly. The reason those party leadership candidates are singing such a good tune on this one is because the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we blasted them with emails from our supporters telling them not to take the money, to take a stand against this. The real question is, why haven't they done it yet?
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. And I mean, these parties are acting like Mr. Burns from The Simpsons taking the last piece of meatloaf. I mean, they're taking more money from struggling taxpayers at the worst possible time. And it's important to remember here that political parties are already massively subsidized with huge tax credits and reimbursements. I mean, federal political parties have received more than $200 million in taxpayer subsidies since 2016.
Yeah, this is a huge waste of money. I can't think of any reason. I can't think of any Canadian, if we walked out on the street right now and said, hey, do you think that money meant for struggling Canadians should go to political parties? I think you get laughed at for even asking the question. This is just political pigs at the trough.
Yeah. Well, Todd, you know what? I can't see too many Canadians getting out of bed in the morning and thinking to themselves, oh boy, you know what we really need more of right now? Yep, more partisan attack ads. You know, I'd say that Canadians need more taxpayer-subsidized attack ads like we need a hole in the head.
So here at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we're going to keep hammering these politicians for taking this money that's meant for struggling Canadians. We're going to hammer them to pay back the money. We've got a petition on taxpayer.com calling on parties to pay back the wage subsidy. We've got the link to that petition right here in the show notes. Give it a signature. Send it to your friends and neighbors. Let's build this up. And we'll also include the emails of the party leaders right in the show notes, so that if you want to just go straight to blasting them, you can type up a note, hit send, let them have it. Thanks for listening to the Canadian Taxpayers Podcast. And thank you to James Wood for editing this show. We give Chris Sims the week off. She is a seasoned broadcast pro. Franco, are you a seasoned broadcast pro?
That's not exactly the word that I would use for what I'm doing here.
I'm definitely not a seasoned broadcast pro. So thank you so much to James Wood for doing the editing on this podcast.
And please subscribe, like, share, and review our show, because it really helps us get the word out to more people. And you know what? Thanks again for listening.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. If you've got another minute, I'd like to ask you to think about the one person you know that would really enjoy listening to this podcast. Do us a favor and do them a favor and send them a quick note to let them know about it. At the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we believe there is power in numbers. That's why we've worked so hard to build an army of taxpayers who are ready to push back. And we did it because people like you shared our work with that one person that they knew would really appreciate taking part. Thanks for listening, and thanks for doing your part to make Canada a better place.